Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, director Marissa Wolf and playwright Christopher Chen will talk about Christopher's The Late Wedding being staged at Crowded Fire Theater. Conductor Ragnar Bolin talks about his work with the San Francisco Symphony this week and with Capella SF next week. Marilyn Levinson and Michael Williams share details about the new season of Bay Area Cabaret up at the Fairmont. And contributor Peter Robinson updates us on Bay Area Book Club activities. Do stay with us. Thus begins Richard Strauss's epic tone poem, Also sprach Zarathustra, the Nietzsche-inspired work in large orchestral form of the philosophy of Persian prophet Zoroaster, who spends years meditating on a mountaintop and then descends to share his insights with the world. In his autobiography, Nietzsche wrote, quote, "With Zarathustra, I have given humankind the greatest present that has ever been made to it so far." Modest thoughts indeed. Phrases that have entered the lexicon from God is dead, the will to power, and the Übermensch, or Superman, stem from these writings. In the pages of Also sprach Zarathustra, Nietzsche also foresaw an upcoming century of wars, quote, "the like of which have never been seen on earth," and predicted that among the spectacle to which the next century invites us is the decision on the fate of the European Jews, and imagined that all this would lead to a state of utter nihilism. Richard Strauss was equally immodest when he referred to his orchestral masterpiece, writing to his wife after the first full rehearsal of his new composition, quote, "Zarathustra is glorious, by far the most important of all my pieces, the most perfect in form, the richest in content, and the most individual in character. The beginning is glorious. All the many passages for string quartet have come off capitally. The fugue is spine-chilling, the dance song simply delightful, faultlessly scored. Orchestra is excellent. In short, I'm a fine fellow and feel just a little pleased with myself." End of that quote. Well, with the world's attention focused on the ancient region once known as Persia, a timely work indeed to serve as the centerpiece for this week's San Francisco Symphony Concerts under the baton of music director Michael Tilson-Thomas. While Strauss's masterpiece, written a few years before the world would enter the 20th century, would be roundly praised for the composer's ability to bring Nietzsche's philosophy via Zoroaster to musical life, it would be a 1968 film by Stanley Kubrick that would truly immortalize the music and make it inextricably linked to 2001: A Space Odyssey. And it is that connection that the smart marketing folks at the San Francisco Symphony have decided to exploit, bringing more music from the film, George Ligeti's Lux Aeterna and Johann Strauss's By the Beautiful Blue Danube to a concert rounded out by works of Lucas Foss and Charles Ives for a truly transcendental orchestral music experience this weekend. Earlier this week, I caught up with San Francisco chorus conductor Ragnar Bohlen in Davies Symphony Hall Green Room for a brief talk about the choral contributions for these concerts.
Welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you so much.
Well, quite a busy week for you with concerts of your own, brand new Capella SF Chamber Choir performing next week, music specially selected to usher in the official change of seasons, including music of your Swedish compatriot Ingvar Lidholm, as well as music of Bach, Arvo Pärt, Schnitke, Rheinberger, which we'll talk about shortly, coinciding with performances of the San Francisco Symphony Chorus and Michael Tilson Thomas conducting this week works that you've prepared by George Ligeti and Lucas Foss. So let's first talk a little bit about Ligeti's Lux Aeterna that will be part of the San Francisco Symphony concerts this week. And that concert will also include Richard Strauss's also Sprach Zarathustra, music of Lucas Foss and Charles Ives, and the very familiar Johann Strauss By the Beautiful Blue Danube. You led performances of the Lux Aeterna here in 2012.
Right, correct. It's a wonderful piece. It's one of those major choral pieces that really good choirs want to take on at some point. It's 16 parts, and it's full of what Ligeti himself termed micropolyphony.
Well, let's back up to that point in itself, which is remarkable. Four voices, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, but each of those four voices divided further into four for 16-part harmony.
Exactly. So much of the time it's about sequences that get spread out among the voice parts in different speeds. So they start out in unison, but then gradually a choral cloud develops because of the fact that they sing this sequence at different speeds. And it's quite remarkable how these the textures, and it's not random, the way that Ligeti chose his sequences, the tonal clusters are very beautiful. And then that gets interspersed by other ideas, such as a very high A coming in sort of in the stratosphere out of the blue that goes on like a drone forever, and certain other shifts and turns, and then this cloud, choral cloud thinking and micropolyphony takes over again.
So is it a matter of the voices hearing those harmonies and the clusters, or is it everyone in their own little sound world and it just happens to come together this way as a cluster?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. At certain points, it's definitely more homophonic and everybody needs to really be aware of each other acutely. But even at the most dense polyphony, you still need to have that open ear awareness so that you know what you're doing in relation to others, because the piece is so sensitive to tuning because of these small steps, because of the tight clusters. It needs to be absolutely pristine.
Well, let's hear an excerpt now from George Ligeti's Lux Aeterna, and then more of my conversation with Ragnar Bohlen.
Thank you.
portion of Lux Aeterna, or Eternal Light, in all of its glorious 16-part clustered harmony, here performed by Capella Amsterdam. It's one of the featured works in this weekend's San Francisco Symphony Concerts under the direction of Michael Tilson Thomas, featuring the music, some of the music heard in 2001, A Space Odyssey. The chorus for these weekend concerts prepared by Ragnar Bolin. Now back to my green room conversation with him.
Now, where did you first encounter the music of Ligeti?
It was through my professor, Eric Erickson, who collaborated very much with Ligeti. George Ligeti was a guest professor in Stockholm in the 60s, and his Requiem, which was written in 1965, was actually premiered in Stockholm, and Lux Aeterna came the year after. So when I studied in the 80s at the Royal Academy of Music, we had Eric Erickson as our professor, and he conducted us in music, contemporary music, such as Lidholm, such as Ligeti's Lux Aeterna, etc. Things that he would do with the Swedish Radio Choir and his own Ericsson Chamber Choir on a regular basis.
So not from the movies?
No, that came later. I do have a funny story regarding the Ligeti Requiem. When Ericsson and his choirs were preparing the Requiem, which is very, very difficult, even more difficult than the Lux Aeterna, for some reason they were not at the Radio House. They had to be at the opera, and at the same time there was construction going on. This was in May, and there were builders up on the roof building and hammering away while they were trying to nail these immensely difficult intervals and intricate rhythms. And on the third day of rehearsals, everybody was on the verge, of a mental breakdown, and at that point, one of the builders sticks his head in through a window and says, "We're very sorry, but we can't work under these circumstances."
Now, another brief a cappella work, choral work that's being featured this week is Lucas Foss's, and this is the official title, "Then the Rocks on the Mountain Began to Shout," Charles Ives. A work written in 1977, first as a brass quintet, then as a work for five mixed voices, or a cappella chorus, the way we'll hear it this week. Now, is Lucas Foss intending this as an homage to Ives, then?
You know, it's not clear to me. I don't think there is any clear evidence in any direction in that regard. I tried to find out why, but I'm not sure, I have to confess.
And so the MTT strategy for including it on this program then as some more of a themed idea to pair with the Ligeti and the Strauss?
Yeah, it definitely pairs really well with the Ligeti Lux Aeterna. Lucas Foss himself tried to explain this piece. It's a five-note chord that dominates the whole composition, and it permutates and transposes, and the whole piece builds up from a very silent opening to becoming louder and louder, and then towards the end a jagged rhythm appears, and then that takes over, and it's a very wild ending to the piece. And Lucas Foss himself puts it like this: "I cannot explain why this chord, which dominates through repetition, variation, permutation, transposition, and inversion of persistent pulsating, echoing, and crisscrossing, lingers like a wound until the rocks begin to shout. Nor do I know what it is that rocks shout. Perhaps Charles Ives does. Perhaps rocks cry help because we do not see we are in danger. Or perhaps they merely shout a reminder of what every work of art tries to tell us, that we must change our lives."
Wow, that's quite something.
Yeah.
So this concert, as I mentioned, with the San Francisco Symphony MTT conducting, includes this music of Lucas Foss as well as Charles Ives' inspired work, so to speak, Johann Strauss by the beautiful Blue Danube. Information for these concerts at sfsymphony.org. The concerts are Thursday. Tonight at 8 o'clock, Friday at 6:30, and then Sunday at 2 o'clock, sfsymphony.org for more information. Other works you're going to be preparing with the San Francisco Symphony later this season?
There is Ravel's Daphnis and Chloe with Michael conducting, and very interesting production that we have coming up in December, the opening of Zellerbach A, that is being rebuilt into a chamber music hall with a sound system that will enable us to have any kind of reverberation and control over the acoustic situation in that room. In itself, it's a fairly dry room, but with this device, we can now have the reverberation of the Notre Dame Cathedral, if we wish. So we're going to make use of that. Michael will be conducting Monteverdi's Magnificat, and there will also be quite a lot of contemporary music, and there will also be sung by the choir medieval music, and we will use different... we will use the space to sing and play from different parts of the hall.
Well, that'll be exciting to see what that's finally going to sound like.
Yeah, we're very excited about that program.
A little further down the road is going to be the massive Missa Solemnis of Beethoven.
Yes, it's the third time we're coming back to that piece now under Michael's direction, and this time around it's going to be semi-staged. So that's going to be very, very interesting.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the wonderful debut last February of your newly formed chamber choir devoted to a cappella repertoire, Cappella SF. Tell us a little bit about the creation of that group.
Well, it's been a long dream of mine to have a small professional chamber choir that can take on all the literature, all the wonderful literature of a cappella music from the earliest, let's say even the 1100s, Perrotin and so on, through Josquin, through Palestrina, and the Renaissance, Baroque, and up to contemporary music, and including commissions.
It must be very gratifying to get such a great critical reaction to your first concert.
Yes, it definitely was. So we're now preparing for our second concert production, which will happen on October 4 and 5. And the theme is autumn light, and we're actually moving from light to darkness, which is kind of the opposite of a lot of programs that I've done in the past and that you may see. So we're starting out with a jubilant Singet im Herrn by Bach, double chorus, and then moving on with another double chorus piece, the wonderful Josef Reinberger's Mass in E-flat major. And then gradually it'll get more introverted and more dark, starting with Liedholm's De Profundis, and then Arvo Pärt's seven Magnificat antiphons, and ending on a very severe note, the two last movements of Alfred Schnittke's Psalms of Repentance, the last of which is a wordless prayer.
So designed as a kind of musical transition from fall into the winter.
Right, right.
For as a New England boy, I kind of miss that stark change of seasons. From New England, you just get that feel in the air come October, and you know that the winter's coming. But here in San Francisco, not so much. So awesome. Maybe we'll get a...
Right, exactly. That's what I thought, that perhaps here in California we need it.
Very nice. Now, these concerts will be on Saturday, October 4th, Palo Alto, Sunday, October 5th, here in San Francisco at St. Mary's Cathedral, a very large space for a small choir. Now, are you intending to highlight that acoustic space, or is it more a matter of adjusting to the space?
Well, we're using coral shells, really... You know, heavy-duty, good coral shells that make that space work acoustically really well. That's what we did in our February debut concert, and we were very pleasantly surprised by the effect of those shells.
And you've performed in both of these sites before?
Yes, yes, I have.
Information about those concerts at cappellasf.org. Ragnar, thanks so much for taking some time today, and I'm sure we'll have you on a little bit down the calendar to talk about some upcoming further events in this season.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Here's a portion now of the Mass of Reinberger, the opening Kyrie, here performed by the San Francisco State University Chamber Chorus under the direction of Dr. Joshua Habermann. The Kyrie from Josef Rheinberger's Mass in E-flat, Opus 109. The San Francisco State University Chamber Chorus in that excerpt under the direction of Dr. Joshua Habermann. That full work being featured in next weekend's concert of Capella SF under the direction of Ragnar Bolin, highlighting the transition of fall into winter. Details at capellasf.org. Good afternoon, I'm David LaTulipe, and you're listening to Open Air on listener-supported KALW. Speaking of that listener support, thank you so much for your pledges of support during the last 2 weeks of shows during our fall membership campaign. Now, whether those pledges were for support of Open Air or not, they were certainly very welcome. And they actually set a new record number of pledges to come in during Open Air, so my thanks to you for that. Still to come, Peter Robinson updates us on Bay Area Book Club activities, and we'll hear about the new season of Bay Area Cabaret at the Fairmont. A world premiere commission is part of Crowded Fire Theater in San Francisco beginning on October 11th. It's by Christopher Chen, and it's called The Late Wedding. This marks Chris's second production with Crowded Fire Theater after critical success of The Hundred Flowers Project in 2012. The play received a 2012 Will Glickman Award, the Rella Loss Playwrights Award, and was shortlisted for the James Tate Black Prize for Drama. Chris joins me in studio along with Marissa Wolf, who is in her sixth season as the artistic director of Crowded Fire Theater. Chris, Marissa, welcome to KLW.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
So, Chris, you let's start with what The Late Wedding is about. Let's get some basics.
Sure. So The Late Wedding is it's an experimental play, and it's the portrait of a marriage. It's actually a portrait of a marriage in crisis, but it's told in a kind of an unconventional way. It's told as a series of fables about other kind of fantastical marriages, and it turns out that each one of these different fables kind of reveals some different psychological insight into this bigger marriage. So that's kind of how the play is structured, and it's inspired by the writings of Italo Calvino, a novelist.
Yeah, for those that aren't familiar with Italo Calvino, what do we know about him? I don't know his work at all.
He is a very famous Italian. He's called a fabulist. He creates fables himself. And he, I think his heyday was around the 60s, the 70s. He's famous here for the novels If on a Winter's Night a Traveler and also Invisible Cities. And in Europe, he's very famous for this book called The Baron in the Trees. He's very, very popular, I would say, amongst college students. He's kind of in the ilk of Borges, and he has resonances of Philip K. Dick, kind of very heady. He really likes to kind of explode the conventions of the novel in very interesting ways.
And you've written also that this is a fluid play in that the cast members, both the number of the cast members could change not only within a production, but from production to production. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I kind of took the ethos of Calvino and his kind of fluid fables in the sense that the fun thing about fables is that they kind of focus in on very, very specific, I would say, either psychological questions or moral questions, and who you kind of put into those fables can sometimes change and shift. And so I kind of really wanted to play with that idea and kind of honor that kind of fable, a tradition of the fable, and kind of run with that. So in the stage directions, I say you can have up to 3 to 16 actors filling in these different roles in any way you choose, just to kind of have fun with the idea that, you know, marriage and relationships have kind of fluidness and they are kind of always changing themselves.
So is there any element of improvisation to the actors on stage then?
There isn't per se, but I think the fun thing that I wanted to try to do with this play is to give the people who would make the full production give them a lot of freedom to do what they want in the process. So there's not any literal improvisation live, but I hope that the process of putting on the play is a fun and fluid and perhaps a little improvisational in spirit.
That's Christopher Chen, the writer of The Late Wedding. We're joined also by Marissa Wolf, who is not only directing the play, but is also in her sixth season as the artistic director of Crowded Fire Theater. Marissa, that must present some challenges.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because Crowded Fire commissioned this play, and so we have had the privilege of workshopping it with Chris over the last 2 years. And what that's meant is that we've had a variety of different actors in the room each time we workshop it, and around the table, if someone was reading with us more than once, we would try them in a different role. So we have a wonderfully diverse cast, and that I think is absolutely where the fun and the heart lies in the play, is trying on different roles. And in fact, even when we thought we had an idea about casting, it was within the first week we changed some of our actor roles around. So there is a sense of kind of rolling with the new play process and the discovery that's different from most other plays.
Mm-hmm. And as you've worked with Christopher before, is this different from his other works?
Yes. I when we did the 100 Flowers project, that was directed by Desdemona Chang. And just from the outside as a producer, I think that there are some similarities in terms of the sort of very gorgeous experimental nature of it and the sense of epic scope and scale. And I think this feels like a very unique and different project from some of his other ones. I think in the structure, in the exploration of these many different couples, and what I love about Chris's writing is that he's constantly setting up rules and then breaking them. So just when you think you've understood sort of the world you're in, he turns it on its head.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what else are you working on besides now that The Late Wedding is complete?
I am going to be going to Philadelphia next month for a new world premiere called Caught. And it is also a kind of a structurally experimental play about a dissident Chinese artist who creates a work of art that also serves as a protest, and he's thrown in jail. But as the play goes on, you realize that things are not as they seem, and you start to question whether or not perhaps his whole story is part of the work of art. So I like to kind of play around with structure and theme and...
Well, we'll hope that comes to Crowded Fire.
Yeah, that's right.
Christopher Chen, thanks for coming in today to talk about The Late Wedding. Marissa Wolf, we wish you a terrific run, and we look forward to the next season of things happening at Crowded Fire.
Great. That's great. Thank you very much.
You can find out some more information about this production, which began on Monday, at crowdedfire.org.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you there. Where are the clouds? Isn't it?
The one and only Judy Collins, part of the 2014-15 season of Bay Area Cabaret. Very pleased to welcome back Marilyn Levinson and Michael Williams, the coordinators of that fine series, to talk about the full season. Michael, Marilyn, welcome back to Open Air.
Thanks.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Well,
thank you.
Judy will be appearing in late February, the last couple of days of February, and March 1st. But there's quite a lineup before then, isn't there?
There sure is. It's our biggest season ever. We're entering our second decade, Bay Area Cabaret, a nonprofit we formed 11 years ago. And we have 9 events this season, 6 in our subscription series and 3 separately purchased special events.
Mm-hmm. So the biggest challenge you must face is calendar issues. How to get, if you have a star that you want to get in, but you've already had someone booked in that space. That must be
a, right, right. Well, that's the thing. It is. It's a big chess game trying to coordinate not only the artists that we want, but trying to. We take a lot of time in trying to vary the season from artist to artist, as far as like a Broadway artist, a jazz artist, a cabaret artist, so that we do have a nice variety, and so that so coordinating that with the particular artist that we want, with their schedules as well, it becomes a bit of a challenge, but one that we're happy to take on.
Yeah, I'm actually really happy with how we ended up this season, and as Michael said, it's really, really a tricky thing to coordinate with schedules. For instance, Anna Lee Ashford is on Masters of Sex, and we coordinate with her taping schedule and all kinds of other considerations. But really happy with the sort of journey that this year's programming takes us on.
Well, things get underway with a big opening night gala. Could you tell us a little bit about that, featuring one of America's most preeminent songwriters that we've got, Stephen Schwartz?
Right. I grew up on Pippin and Godspell. And,
sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's unfortunate that there were two Stephens who were songwriters born in the same generation, because I think that both are so magnificent and so very, very different. Stephen Schwartz, just getting some background in his music and preparing for this gala, it just blew me away, all that he's done. You know, he wrote Butterflies Are Free. He wrote all these musicals that we talk about. And then he collaborated with Alan Menken on Enchanted, Hunchback of Notre Dame, etc.
Pocahontas.
Egypt, yeah. Exactly. And then apparently he spent 3 years at home believing that he was a failure before he actually wrote Wicked.
Wow. Yeah. And that's just totally revived his career and everything. What I didn't realize in doing a little bit of research on Stephen Schwartz is that he worked on lyrics with Leonard Bernstein on Mass. And
yes.
Mass was one of the most important things that I ever listened to growing up.
Yes.
It had a profound effect on me. And I'm just now realizing that was Stephen Schwartz.
Exactly.
Name.
I didn't realize that either. Wow.
Well, we've got magic to do then for the cabaret. Let's hear a little bit of Stephen Schwartz, the magic to do from Pippin, and then more with Michael Williams and Marilyn Levinson. Well, that's a tune that kind of sums up the next season of Bay Area Cabaret, 14th, 15th season, at the Venetian Room of the Fairmont in San Francisco. Marilyn Levinson and Michael Williams here to talk about that this opening gala featuring the music of Stephen Schwartz.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting, the evening, because it's going to be a mix of music interviewing Stephen on stage. Stephen will be there with Michael Kirker, who's from ASCAP, interviewing Stephen, and it'll be interspersed with his music. And we're very excited to have some of the artists that will be singing the music. Anna Gasteyer, who most people know from Saturday Night Live, and the TV show Suburgatory. She's also done a few musicals on Broadway, including Wicked. She starred as Elphaba on Broadway, and also in the Chicago production of Wicked. So she'll be one of our stars. Liz Callaway, who was in Miss Saigon on Broadway, and Cats, and numerous Broadway shows. She will also be there, and she's one of Stephen's favorite singers, and one of mine as well. And then we have...
We have Michael Orland as musical director.
Yeah.
He's the musical director of American Idol. And we also have some young people joining us who are absolutely amazing. Peter Scatini, who won our Bay Area Teen Idol competition this year and is a freshman at the University of Michigan. Jesse Epstein from the La Mirinda Idol competition, and others as well.
opening night gala on the 27th of September at 8 o'clock. Don't miss your chance to mingle with Oscar, Grammy, Tony Award winner Stephen Schwartz and a virtual array of stars for this opening night gala of Bay Area Cabaret. Information at bayareacabaret.org. A lot more names to go throughout this 14-15 season. A name that I hadn't thought about for a long time, Leslie Uggams. Still going strong.
Amazing.
Really?
Amazing. We just saw her in New York a couple of months ago, and I've been a fan of her since I was a little kid, and it was on my birthday, and I couldn't have asked for a better birthday gift.
Right.
Thinking about that show now still gives me goosebumps. The power of her voice. She's working on a Broadway show in which she's portraying Lena Horne. She is someone that reminds me of Lena, that she has that power and that fire, but yet she's so grounded in all that she does.
And so funny, too.
Yeah.
She's so disarmingly real when she talks about the experience on the White House lawn when she flubbed the words to June is busting out all over.
Oh, my.
it's really fantastic, and her voice is just so amazing.
Celebrating over 60 years in show business and her first Bay Area concert in over 20. So
yeah,
that's fantastic
right.
to have
yeah.
her back.
That's, right.
That's going to be on Sunday, November 2nd and at 5 p.m. Sierra
Boggess
is on the way.
Yes.
Her
voice
December.
Is absolutely thrilling. She's starring in Phantom of the Opera in New York right now with Norm Lewis. She's an Olivier Award nominee, and her voice is a phenomenon. She's also a very down-to-earth cabaret performer.
Yeah. A lot of people will know her from starring as Ariel in The Little Mermaid on Broadway. That was her Broadway debut, actually.
And then we move on. We start the new year already in February for Bay Area Cabaret with Stacey Kent, The Changing Lights. We mentioned Judy Collins in late February. Annalie Ashford we talked about as well. She's going to be here in April. And a couple more to go still.
Yes. Annalie Ashford is absolutely hilarious. She's in You Can't Take It With You on Broadway right now with James Earl Jones. And she was in Kinky Boots. That got her Tony nomination. And, of course, she's Betty DeMello on Masters of Sex.
On Showtime, yeah. Hilarious. Yeah. Mm. And she's great.
Bobby Conte Thornton making a concert debut in May. Lilias White and Billy Stritch.
Lilias White and Billy Stritch.
Tremendous finale.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm. And we have one more special event, which is in March, and that is Grammy winner Ramsey Lewis, who is like a jazz pianist legend, along with jazz guitarist and Grammy nominee John Pizzarelli.
In a tribute to Nat King Cole called Straighten Up and Fly Right.
Oh, fantastic. Well, let's hear a little bit of music of John Pizzarelli as we think about the Bay Area Cabaret's 14-15 season. Marilyn Levinson, Michael Williams, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you, David.
Share information at bayareacabaret.org. John Pizzarelli.
More than 2,000 miles away. A good joke is on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City, Lamite, Bridge, Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, Anova, Winona, Kingman, Boston, San Bernardino. Won't you get into this town? Let it. When you make that California trip, I said, did you get on Route 66? On Route
John Pizzarelli from a 1995 live performance in Germany. John, part of the Bay Area Cabaret lineup for March 21st, 2015, appearing with Ramsey Lewis in a show called Straighten Up and Fly Right, a tribute to Nat King Cole. Information at bayareacabaret.org.
Paperback writer.
And back for a more thorough review of book club's activities in September is our critic at large, Peter Robinson. Hey, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And I always smile when I hear that old Beatles number, because when that song was written, you know, there were not e-books. You couldn't download Audible books. And, of course, we did have the old favourites, the real printed book, which we hold in our hands.
Is there any song about e-books? I don't think there are.
Well, I don't know how melodic they would make it to me. I've got to say that I'm biased. I'm a dinosaur. So when I read, I still hold the printed book in my hand. And I have a theory which no brain scientist can prove, and that is the words come off the page, they come up your arm, they find their way into your head, but as they pass through, you savour them, you swallow them, you digest them, and of course you enjoy them. And I think if there's one theory I have about reading, it comes from a line in a C.S. Lewis book called Shadowlands, in which he says we read to know we're not alone. We read to know we're not alone. And I think that is the great basis for a book club. A book club is different ways of getting different people's take on what's in front of their eyes in printed form. It's a way of bonding, a way of bringing people together. And over the years, over the last 20 years, I suppose I've spoken at about 50 or 60 different Bay Area book clubs, and September is definitely the season where reading begins to take place. The days are getting shorter, and, of course, the evenings are given to discussion. Now, if you're new to the Bay Area, if you're a radio listener and you're looking for a book club, I can give you a couple of two places where you may want to start your search. The first is the bookstore Books, Inc. They actually run across the Bay Area, East Bay, downtown, Marin, and beyond, some 22 active book clubs, and then there's 10 which meet on a less frequent basis. And they run in terms of theme, because often a book club will have a particular theme. For example, the San Francisco Travel Book Club, which is at Books, Inc. on Chestnut Street. And their upcoming reading is a book called Crazy River by Richard Grant, and then The Bicycle Diaries by David Byrne. On other days of the week, they have the Miss Jane Austen Book Club, which is a very thorough analysis of what is happening in Jane Austen. And in fact, their opening reading is called The Real Jane Austen by Paula Byrne. And on another day of the week, they have Classics I Forgot to Read is a book club which gives you time to catch up on those things that maybe you should have read, but today you haven't read. So that's just one beginning, but there are, as I say, some 30 others run through Books, Inc., and if you want a list of those, you can either go directly to Books, Inc., and there's also a list produced by the San Francisco Literary Society. Cross the bridge into Marin, and you go to Book Passage. Book Passage is one of the great outstanding independent bookstores that has really stood the test of time, continues to bring great authors. And they're almost like a university because they combine not only book clubs, but they offer both writing and art classes. You can get everything from memoir writing to breaking into fiction. One particular group that I recommend is written, organized by writer Mary Reynolds Thompson. It looks at literature, landscape, and imagination. So again, Book Passage in Marin. They have another outlet at the Ferry Building. And another program they do, which is increasing in popularity, is books about cooks and cooks about books. So if you want to combine a meal with how to prepare the recipe, there are numerous cooking book clubs. The San Francisco Literary Society also kicks off in October, and they, as a theme, have turning books into movies. So they are looking at how many different books in the end up on the silver screen. And coming up on October the 9th is Charlie Wilson's War. This is a classic. Philip Seymour Hoffman appears as a CIA agent. Charlie Wilson was a Texas congressman who actually found a way through a female millionaireess to bring guns to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And as we begin to take another look at trouble in the Middle East and how to rearm people, I think Charlie Wilson's War is indeed a timely reminder that what you give to one enemy can be tomorrow's enemy, and the same weapons could easily be used against you.
Yeah, I'd like to see some of the things traced today that are going out there. Directed, by the way, by a gentleman I had the distinct honor of working with back in 2000, director Mike Nichols. Tremendous gentleman.
Yeah, it's an excellent movie, and it's actually based on Grill's book, which he used to work for 60 Minutes, so the research on this story is well worth watching. Now, if you want a comprehensive list of what book club would work for you, what's your taste in reading, you can always call the San Francisco Literary Society. The number there is 415-381-6671, or shoot an email over to sanfranlit@aol.com. And we can give you some background on what type of books you like to read and which sort of book club if you're now in the Bay Area looking for something this September, October, November, the season of reading, for a book club for yourself.
Thanks, Peter. We look forward to your next update.
Good to see you, David. Good to be here.
Using music of Richard Strauss as musical bookends to today's edition of Open Air, here's Das Tanzlied, or the dance song, which the very wonderful program annotator for the San Francisco Symphony, James Keller, suggests perhaps as a Viennese waltz for our fully realized Superman. More music of Also Sprach Zarathustra being performed this weekend with the San Francisco Symphony. Thank you. Herbert von Karajan leading the Berlin Philharmonic in that excerpt from Also sprach Zarathustra, conducted by Michael Tilson Thomas tonight and this weekend. You'll probably hear Alexander Baranchik in the solo violin, which there was performed by Thomas Brandis. I'm David LaTulip. You've been listening to Open Air here on local public radio, KALW, San Francisco. My thanks to producer Niels Swinkels for arranging so much of the aspects of today's and every week's production here of Open Air. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. You can email me, david@kalw.org, if you've got a program suggestion or a segment that you like, some performing arts group you'd like featured. We'd be happy to consider that. Next week, do tune in. You'll be treated to, in part, a live performance by flutist Robert Stallman, flutist Isabelle Chapuis, and myself on flute for a live performance of some flute trios, as well as some anticipated concerts by Robert Stallman here in the Bay Area. I'm David LaTulip. Once again, thanks again for listening to Open Air. BBC News is coming up next.